Here's the proposition that we're dealing with tonight. Here's the proposition that we're dealing with tonight. It's going to be very important for us to contemplate this. That when you are taking up the institution of marriage, when you're talking about being married, you are actually talking about being committed to meeting each other's needs. When you're talking about being married, you're talking about being committed to meeting each other's needs. I want that to be driven home, because most people who get married don't get married with the objective of meeting the other person's need. They only get married with the objective of having their own needs met. And that becomes the fundamental sort of crux or nexus of the problem in marriage. So what I want to make sure that gets driven home as a basic thesis, if this is going to work for those of us who are wanting our marriages to be better, and it can be, this class, if you hold on and go through all the classes, it will actually force you into a model of relationship that demands that you meet each other's needs. And what that means is, when you and I are not constrained by virtues or principles to do the right thing, we won't do the right thing, because we're selfish by nature. So the mystery as to why marriages are poor and struggle and don't work as they ought to is because by nature we're selfish. And you're going to see that as we go through the class tonight and as we begin to work through the questions and some of the propositions in our PowerPoint and certainly the videos. So I'm so thankful to see a really good class out tonight again. I'm so thankful to see many of you who have been here the first two, three times. I've been praying that what I would have in this session of seminars are people who really, 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 really want to have a good marriage. I've been praying that the young people that are a part of us who one day aspire to marriage really want to prepare their hearts and minds to be good husbands and good wives, because it doesn't happen by accident. You have to work at it. And so I'm so glad to see you guys tonight. Rules of engagement to marriage according to the gospel. First point, here we go. Marriage. I want you guys to pay attention to this statement. Marriage is a relationship of extraordinary care. Marriage is a relationship of extraordinary care. Now, I wish right now that you had a desk in front of you like we were in class, with pencils and pens and paper, so that you can write what I said. Because some people get it when it's audibilized. Others only get it by writing it out so that they can see it reflected on paper and in print. Marriage is a relationship of extraordinary care. I'm getting ready to run. We will be getting into our questionnaire and filling out our his needs, her needs sheet in about an hour. So right now we're getting ready to just expound on marriage from this perspective. If I'm married, I have committed myself to a relationship of extraordinary care. You guys can own that concept as the basic definition of marriage. You know what that means? Every other relationship is ordinary. Every other relationship is ordinary, except the relationship between the husband and the wife. If the husband and the wife view their relationship as just as the same as every other relationship, you don't have biblical marriage. Biblical marriage is the relationship of extraordinary care. Hence, we can say, when we have taken that basic premise as our axiom, that you, my wife, my husband, is the most important person in my life. The most important person in my life is my wife. less God, beside God, the most important person in my life is my wife. I want to drive that home, because if that's not a basic premise for your relationship, now you know why your relationship is difficult. First, it's an ordinary relationship on a par with every other platonic relationship. Secondly, your spouse is not the most important person in your life. And while that is the case, you are not functioning as married people, and therefore every other thing in the world can enter in and corrupt the model and institution called marriage in your life. I want you to think that one through. I want you to think it through. I want you to ask yourself, do you own these definitions as a proper and biblical view of marriage? Do I see marriage as a relationship of extraordinary care? And is my spouse truly in my heart, and hopefully we can work it out in our lives, the most important person in my life? This statement is called a covenant principle. For those of you who may know a little bit of grammar, I didn't get my spelling wrong on the word principle. There are two meanings to principle. One is a set of precepts, set of laws and axioms, methods by which you do something. The other principle is the word for priority, preeminent. It is the chief of all objectives. So when I say this statement is called a covenant principle, it means that for the person who understands biblical marriage, a relationship of extraordinary care, and my spouse being the most important person in my life, is my ultimate priority. That's my ultimate priority. And if they're not, then you have fallen short of biblical marriage. Let me go on. It is the ultimate ethic and priority of the marriage relationship. And I'm quoting Ephesians 5, 22 through 33. I don't want you to go there. But if you go and look at what the apostle says in Ephesians 5, 22 through 33, and really let those verses speak to you, here's what you will discover. Two people who are radically committed to each other to the highest level, that their relationship amounts to a revelation of the glory of God in Christ in his love for the church. This is why Paul closes out Ephesians 5 with this language. And I speak a great mystery concerning Christ in the church, meaning the effort and the labor and the intentionality and the work that goes into two people exercising every day extraordinary care towards one another becomes a mold that God uses to shape and form an image of Christ in the church. When people see the husband radically committed to his wife, exclusively committed to her, and when people see the wife radically committed to the husband, exclusively committed to him, in such a way that her thesis operates like this: if this doesn't benefit my husband, I'm not interested. If this doesn't benefit my wife, I don't want to have nothing to do with it. When people see that, they know that individual has something absolutely unique. Marriage is the relationship of an extraordinary care. Second point, when the man and the woman truly take to heart this rule, then the life issues which confront them, with all of the choices we have, all of the options, and therefore all of the temptations that come into our life. When you become a married couple, you're dealing with choices, right? You're dealing with options to do this or do that, right? And you're also dealing with temptations, aren't you? Options, choices, temptation. That's the garden account, Genesis 3, 1 through 7. Watch this. They will take their natural place of importance and never become an idolatrizing object to the marriage. When a man or woman is able to hold as ultimate the priority of their spouse as the most important thing, every option, every choice, every challenge, every opportunity that comes their way will never overthrow the priority of their spouse. It will never become an opportunity to be an idol in our life. Are you guys following me so far? Good, I'm glad. I know you're smart people. Next PowerPoint. Here we go. Let's keep rolling. Love, L-O-V-E. This is what we're going to touch on a little bit tonight. Love. Remember, that's the basic principle and basic motive for which we do everything towards our spouse. love and do whatever you want to do. Love and do whatever you want to do. If you get love right, you can do whatever you want to do. Barbara, if you love me, do whatever you want to do, girl. I'm cool with it. Jesse, if you love me, man, do whatever you want to do. I'm cool with it. Because love will never do anything to harm the one it loves. See, love now becomes a law, a principle, a guiding factor for my choices and actions. And watch this. It will never, ever, ever hurt the one that it loves. Now love becomes the most freeing and liberating principle that we can have in a marriage. You know how we squabble and argue about all kind of little petty things, right? We actually do that because we have either a very constrained view of love or no view, no love at all. When you and I have to kind of rein each other in and stop each other and argue and debate, you know, tug of war over this, over that, over the choices and actions. We're going to work that through on a very practical level over the next 3 or 4 weeks. It's simply because I can't trust my wife to make a decision that's not going to hurt me. I can't trust my spouse to make a decision that's not going to hurt me. But now if I know my wife loves me and hold me as the highest object of her affection and her goals in life, bless God, whatever she does is great because it's never going to challenge our relationship. Does that make some sense? That's Romans chapter 13, verse 8, reading your own time. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, it lays out adjectives and descriptives of the behavior of love. You guys have read them. They come up in weddings. They come up all over the place. Every now and then, y'all might quote them here and there. You don't quote them to each other. You know, we don't talk, husbands and wives today don't talk loving anymore. But love and do what you will, as St. Augustine used it, it was perpetuated throughout the early patristic years, and it's not a term that's used anymore. Extraordinary care. It means that we must naturally apply ourselves to the relationship with a level of effort and purpose beyond the norm. So now watch this. If you are feeling like, man, this brother is talking about a whole lot of work, now you got it. Now you got it. Now you've got what love is, as it's building a foundation for a relationship that's going to be strong and last. If you've got the sense that what I am saying is, are you ready to put in the hard work of making that marriage really something that is lasting and filled with joy and happiness, mixed with pain and difficulty? This is how God builds families. Then you've got this idea of extraordinary care. If you don't, if you have an aversion to the hard work, then you're going to have a poor marriage. So, what is extraordinary care? It means that we must naturally apply ourselves to the relationship with a level of effort and purpose beyond the norm. Caution. This does not mean becoming obsessive or impractically extreme. So, you know, unfortunately, we have to use caveats, and you'll see why this is important. If an individual pours out themselves to you and says, I'm going to commit myself to you, but you are a controlling person, or an abusive person, all that individual who is assessing to want to give themselves to you fully is setting themselves up to do is be hurt. If you are a controlling person or an abusive person, the individual that wants to love you with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength is simply going to become a victim to your abusive, controlling ways. Are you guys hearing what I'm saying? This is why people don't even have a context often wherein they can even attempt to love someone, because very frequently you and I are impeded by a characteristic of abuse and control, which is rooted in our selfishness. And so this is why even with getting married, we would want to really vet that person we're saying that we're going to marry to make sure that individual is not abusive are controlling. Because if they're abusive and controlling, there's no way they can reciprocate with you in love. All they can do is take from you. I'm going to get into that. So, next PowerPoint. Here we go. Love and do what you will. Unfortunately, couples often fail to realize this principle and frequently forget it. What is it? The extraordinary care that goes on in the relationship. The need to make sure I'm intentional and purposeful and committed to making my spouse happy. Unfortunately, couples often fail to realize this and forget it. The extra then drops off of the ordinary. You know, we start off with extraordinary. And a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later, where'd the extra go? Now we're down to ordinary, right? We're down to ordinary. I don't want to go into examples, but I can go into examples ad infinitum. We end up in an ordinary state, and watch this now, and the care ends up being carelessness. Thus, the door opens for the four horsemen. You remember the four horsemen? Contempt, criticism, stonewalling, and defensiveness. See, the four horsemen, which we looked at a little bit, and we'll come back to that later on, maybe tonight, as we begin to do some therapy, because some of us are in that place right now. In our relationships, we have a contemptuous relationship with our spouse. We have contempt for them. Or we have actually advanced from contempt to criticism. See, now, criticism is simply the overt expression of inward contempt. When you have contempt for somebody, it's inward. It's how you think about them. Criticism is the overflow of contempt, where you are willing to talk bad about them and to them about them from the overflow of contempt. Now, here's the mystery, saints. Watch this. When you're first married, you never, ever think you will move into a place of contempt for your spouse. And then one day you look up and go, man, this individual stinks to me. I'm just telling you the truth. Criticism moves to stonewalling. Stonewalling is that place where, because we don't know how to work through conflicts, we actually violate the rules of working things through by stonewalling. We'll talk more about that. And then finally, at the end of this negative process of what we would call a breakdown in communication, is defensiveness. We've talked about defensiveness before. When you are defensive, you are basically protecting yourself from either someone's assessment of you because they are seeking to hurt you. You know how you protect yourself in a defensive way? That's a virtuous defensiveness. Or when you're defensive, watch this now, you are not willing to be critiqued for something that really is bad in your life. And there are very clear maladies, very clear evidences of that, and we'll come back to that. The reason I pulled that up as we're getting ready to move forward in our PowerPoint is, again, most of us are along the spectrum of contempt, criticism, stonewalling, and defensiveness. Am I telling the truth? Most of us are along that line. You ain't got to wave your hand. I know you don't want your spouse hitting you upside the head. But most of us have fallen into some of those categories one way or the other. It's a dreadful place to be. And we want to talk about why that occurs. Fundamentally, that occurs is because we fail to understand how easy it is to get away from the priority of extraordinary care to our spouse. And when we go back to the ordinary, we open the door for other things to come in and change our view of them. And we start dealing with them in an unsanctified way. An unsanctified way. So remember also that these are symptoms of a larger problem. The real problem is not effectively meeting the natural needs of our spouse. That's what we're going to get into today. One of the reasons why we end up hurting each other is because we have failed to, over the long term, meet each other's needs. And in the process of the relationship, we are hurting so bad because our needs are not being met. We now have to act out towards one another in less than kind ways. And those sort of actions back and forth produce the horsemen, the four horsemen of contempt, criticism, stonewalling, and defensiveness. Watch this. This is an analytical, not a critical statement that I'm making. And you should know the difference. You guys know the difference between being analytical and objective in what you have to say to your spouse rather than or versus being critical to what you have to say to your spouse? Y'all know the difference? No, you don't. So I help you. Thank you. I help you. Help you. I'm just break the ice because I know some of y'all already hurting right now. When you're critical of your spouse, you are actually intentionally seeking to harm them by what you say. You want them to be hurt by your words. That's what critical is. And remember what I said in our class as we were going to set the class up so that we can actually make it through our 6 or 7 weeks? We're not in critical mode. We're in confessional mode. You guys remember that? I said the difference between being in confessional mode and critical mode is that in confessional mode, I'm acknowledging my error. In critical mode, I'm acknowledging your error. When I'm critical, hey, not me. This is you the problem. When I'm confessional, I'm saying, you know what? I know somewhere along the line, I have contributed to this funky marriage that we have. That's called a confessional mode. This is where our Lord Jesus Christ gives us the option to sustain our walk with Him, who is a perfect husband and never does us wrong. Does He? Does the Lord Jesus ever do us wrong? So there's never a time when I can critique Him as a husband. So therefore, the only option I have is to look at myself and make sure that where I am in my walk with Jesus is confessional, because He's there to help me. He's there to meet my needs. Am I there to meet His needs? See what I'm getting at? And the basic premise of what we're getting ready to deal with is this. The reason why marriages do not get off the ground, the reason why they don't reach 35,000 feet, as I've talked about the analogy of flying a plane, so that they're flying smoothly and enjoying the progression and the excursion and the journey to glory, is because we fail to understand how much effort goes into loving each other and meeting needs. So from here on out, for those of you who are in our class, what I want you to embrace is this. If I'm married, or if I'm about to be married, my job is to meet her needs. My job is to meet His needs. If we can keep that as the main objective, we will have a very blessed marriage. You guys got that? Okay, so we can move forward a little bit then. When this occurs, watch this. When we find ourselves moving from extraordinary to ordinary and from care to carelessness, and therefore contempt, criticism, stonewalling, and defensiveness enters into the relationship, because we have not been able to effectively meet each other's needs, when this occurs, we have begun to take each other for what? Granted. Do you know the feeling of taking each other for granted? I want to show you a Bible verse that's going to actually help us depict this. Pull up Proverbs chapter 24, verse 31. Proverbs 24:31. Now, Solomon, who knew a little something about marriage, although he shouldn't be a marriage counselor at all, but since he had the Holy Spirit, we're going to give him a little credit for being able to tell us how not to do it. And Proverbs, that's a little confounded. There we go. Proverbs, no, that's not 31:31. We want Proverbs chapter 24:31. Proverbs 24:31. I want you guys to mark this proverb. I'm going to start back at verse 30. Verse 30. Are you there? Start back at verse 30. Proverbs 24, verse 30. This is important for us to see. Here it is. Watch this. This is Solomon talking about a home. And every marriage is a home. Every marriage is a home. And when people pass by your house, they can tell how much care goes into your house when they look at it. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Now, this here is his assessment of the persons that own the property. They're lazy and ignorant. They're lazy and ignorant. Verse 31. Watch this now, ladies and gentlemen. Watch this. Here it is. And lo, it was all grown over with what? And nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was what? That's the depiction of many marriages. That's what many marriages look like. When people pass by your marriage, do they see neglect? Do they see ignorance? Do they see a person ignorant of what marriage constitutes and how to do marriage? Do they see people too lazy to work on their marriage? Yes, they do. That is, when our marriages are poor, that's what they see. They get a vision of two people who are not keeping care of each other. That makes sense, doesn't it? That makes a whole lot of sense. And so I want you to see that in a spiritual sense as to where we are in the upkeep of each other as spouses. If I do not view my wife as the most important person in my life, for whom therefore I am to exercise an extraordinary care, she will look like a bramble bush instead of a glorious garden, and vice versa. And our home will be devastated. Our home will be devastated, and people passing by will not want to visit and certainly would not want to take nothing from it. Scared they're going to get a disease. All right, let's go back to our PowerPoint and do some work. Remember, you and I are in confessional mode. We're not in criticism mode, right? We're in confessional mode because we're here to actually do better, are we not? Okay, so now, move us to the next PowerPoint. Let's keep moving. Biblical anthropology. I need to talk to us briefly about this because this is critical. This is going to move us towards our basic premise, and that is she has needs and he has needs. I think also back when we read in Proverbs chapter 24 that the man was void of understanding, the people were void of understanding, it means they're very ignorant of themselves. You and I can be quite ignorant of ourselves. Like the paperwork you have, Trinity, come up here. I need you to get some paperwork for me. Like the paperwork you guys have in front of you that we're going to fill out tonight, the paperwork that you have is going to presume that you know enough about yourself to be able to enjoy me in the process. If you don't know anything about yourself, you're not going to be able to fill this paperwork out. It is the assumption that when you marry that individual, this is for your mom. But you can take this, sweetheart, because you're not getting married for 20 years. Right? There you go. But you can start working on it. Get to know you. That's my baby. That's the last one. Hallelujah. Got 6 grandkids now. But she ain't getting married for 20 years. But she might as well get started now. Don't you think so? Don't you think our daughters need to get started right now? And our sons as well, figuring this thing out? Biblical anthropology tells us that you and I have 3 needs. We have need to understand humanity from the standpoint of a theological framework, That is, we need to know that we were created by God, we were created in the image of God, and we bear the communicable attributes of God as his image bearers. We are the most dignified of all of God's creation, so much so that he calls us his sons and his daughters. Theology, then, is a critical component to your need. You actually have that in your last week's outline. Theology is a critical component to the need of mankind. Psychology deals with our mind in terms of its relationship to our body. Theology deals with our mind in terms of our relationship with God. Psychology deals with our mind in terms of our relationship to our bodies, who I am as a person, and how with my body I interact with other people. Are you guys following me so far? Psychology deals with behavior of human beings from the standpoint of our human makeup, our needs with God and our needs with one another. Theology deals with the fundamental core of us as being spiritual creatures. And as spiritual creatures, we need theology to meet the needs of our spirit. From a psychological standpoint, we are gifted with the capacity of analyzing and determining our human needs and ferreting out or working through those needs from the standpoint of what our human makeup requires. And we'll see that in a moment. Soteriology is the last line of thought. And the word soteriology is the word for salvation. Salvation. You know what that means? We need theology to know God. We need psychology to know ourselves. And we need soteriology to be saved from what ourselves are ultimately succumbing to in that sin. If you come to know God, you'll come to know yourself. And if you come to know yourself, what you'll come to know is my greatest need is salvation. Do you guys get that? If you don't think you need a savior, you shouldn't be married. Marriage will teach you how sinful you are. It'll teach you how much you need God. Because see, here's what I can tell you now, if you don't already believe it, that when you said I do to that woman, you were actually accepting a mission that was too great for you. That the idea you can meet all her needs was an absolute failure. You couldn't do it. You can't do it by yourself. So you got trapped, brother. You got trapped, sister, when you said, we're going to try to meet each other's needs. But you were trapped intentionally. Because in order to meet each other's needs, you need a third rail in the relationship. And who is that third rail? That's right. That's right. That's right. So the character of man before God, for God, is a creature of communion with God. That's where theology comes in. The way you and I communicate with God is through a theological prism, not a psychological one. Even though psychology is not excluded from it. This is an underlying assumption with the Bible. What do I mean by an underlying assumption? That the Bible doesn't explain to you and me that when God created Adam and Eve, He immediately entered into communion and fellowship with them. And God just said, oh, by the way, let me help you understand why when I created Adam, I could talk to him directly without teaching him what I understand and what I know. We immediately have communion because he created us for communion with himself. It was an underlying assumption for those who are reading their Bibles. This is true for believers, and communion with God is an experiential thing without question. Move to our next PowerPoint. Watch this. Therefore, the threefold need of man is that he is spirit, soul, and body. Do you accept that premise? You actually have to, because it's an unavoidable reality. We are spiritual creatures in that we were made for God, but we are also soulish creatures in that we are individual persons with unique needs and capacities by which our individuality is established, our personhood is established. That's what we mean by a soul, an individual soul. We have a spirit, we are a soul, and then we possess a body, our physical body. Now that physical body is a servant by which you are to express yourself in relationship to everyone on a horizontal level, as well as your relationship with God. If you are a believer in Christ, you know the Bible says that we are to present ourselves a living sacrifice unto the Lord. Present your bodies. That is your whole being, right? Fundamentally speaking, there's virtually nothing that you and I do that we don't do with our body. Because our mind is cased in our body. So even when we're talking to God from the inner man in our spirit, we're still using our mind to do it. Is that not so? All right, so what I am posing is a trifold category of man's need. Holistically, he must be enriched with these three things to be all that he is called to be. I want you to embrace these three propositions. First of all, you need truth. Truth is the only way you're going to make it through this life and enter into glory. If you're living a lie, you're headed to hell and you're not happy. If you're living a lie right now, you're headed to hell and you're not happy. And you can be in the church and headed to hell because you're living a lie. Okay? Truth is a critical component to your happiness because God is a God of truth. He made you in His image, and He means for you to relate to Him on grounds of truth. Fundamentally, truth is a number one position, or what we call position one in marriage, between you and God. See, if God's your husband through Christ and you're His bride, what He wants from you is what? Truth. Because He's going to give you the truth. He don't want you lying to Him, trying to manipulate Him, con Him. You can do that in religion, but you can't do that with God. Position number one, we talked about the five positions. We'll get back there over the course of the series. But in the relationship between you and God, God says, I'm not putting up with position two. Position two is for you and the folks down there. What I want is a face-to-face relationship where you tell me the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And I promise you, I'm going to tell you the truth, says God. That's why Psalm 51 around verse 6 says, God desires truth from the inward part, and from the hidden parts, He will reveal His glory to you in the person of Christ as wisdom. You can know people when you can know people when you meet them, whether or not they know God. People that know God don't play with God because they're serious about truth. Okay. So the next category that mankind needs is affirmation of his essence. We call it ego. Ego is the self-reflecting capacity for you and I to know that we are an individual. In other words, we are conscious of ourselves. So I can say, I am Jesse. I have just self-reflected. I have the capacity to comprehend that I am an entity. I am a person unique from every other person on planet Earth. I don't share the essence of who I am as an individual person with anyone else. Watch this. Me and my wife are one covenantally, but we are two individually. She is Barbara, I am Jesse. That will always be the case. We are one covenantally. That means we are bound to the covenant terms so that as we execute that marital covenant bond, oneness things come out of us. Ooh, that's good. Can I share with you one of the oneness things that come out of us? Trinity, the one that came up on the stage. She's a combination of me and Barbara. You got that? She's a combination. And we can go into the rich factors of that. But in that I am an individual being with the capacity of self-reflection and able to recognize that I am a soul all by myself, guess what I need? I need affirmation. I need affirmation of my existence. How crazy it would be for you to exist and be conscious of your own personal existence and everybody in the universe ignored you. Are you staying with me? Watch this. So profound is this concept of personal affirmation, critical to our existence. You and I seek that affirmation everywhere. We seek to be affirmed as a real being existing with purpose everywhere. We seek it everywhere. We seek it in every relationship we can find. We want people to acknowledge that I am a real being with real purpose and real existence, unique to God like no other snowflake among human beings. Guess what? In the context of marriage, the one person who is to constantly affirm your unique existence is your spouse. That is a profound need. That's why you married them. You married them for them to perpetuate a constant affirmation of your significance and relevance. Did you guys get that? Can I go on? Okay, good. This is very important. See, this is under the rubric of recognizing that we have needs. I have need of God, but God also knows that I have need of others. It is not good that man should be what? Am I making some sense now? So I need to be affirmed. And then also, because I am a spirit, soul, and body, I need to be provisional in my relationship. Provisional. What do you mean by that? Because I have needs, I have to have those needs supplied. God has to supply me with the needs of the riches of His grace in order for truth to impact my life and change it. If I am in relationship with my wife, Barbara, she has to provide for me not only the affirmation of my personhood as an ego, but she has to provide for me all of those other elements that make up who I am as a man. What are those provisional elements? Love, attention, care, concern, corresponding to my limited needs as an individual. Am I making some sense now? Provisional. That's what relationships are about. Provisional. Being provisional. What good is it for her to say, you know, I see you. I acknowledge who you are. Yeah, you. And then do not move into the next phase of providing for my needs in a covenant context. Am I making some sense? So three things before we move on. I am saying that for a person to be happy as an individual and for couples to be happy, they must acknowledge this threefold reality, truth, affirmation, and provision. I have to be ready to walk in the truth of God's word. I need to be affirmed by my spouse, and I need to be provisional in my mutual reciprocal relationship with her and her with me. We provide for one another. We provide for one another. Let's move forward. See if I can move forward. So truth. What is truth? It's for a spirit. He cannot function as a man without it. His or her mind must be furnished with a knowledge of God. Is that true, saints? Yes. That's right. My people perish for lack of what? And therefore we are men and women that are void of understanding. Many verses like that. John 17:3. And this is eternal life, that they might know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom he has sent. Watch this. The Father knows that you need truth to live. He says, this is eternal life, that in order for them to live spiritually, they must know me, and I must know them. Truth is critically important. Next one. Watch this. Affirmation of significance. I am a man. I am a woman. I, therefore, am in need of what? Of attention, relationship, affection, mutual and corresponding activity, communion, reciprocation, and what? Satisfaction. That's in your outline. That's what we need. My wife signed up for that. That should have been in your outline. If it's not, don't worry about it. I thought it was, but if it's not, just think it through. Get the CD. As a man, as a woman, I am in need of attention. Do you guys accept that proposition? I am in need of a relationship. I am in need of affection. Do you know we can create killing machines in human beings by defrauding them of affection? Are you hearing me? All you have to do is withdraw affection from a human being and you create a killing machine. You create an animal. I need attention, relationship, affection, and mutual corresponding activity. The health of a relationship in a marriage is mutual corresponding activity. This is where when we get into not only the her needs, his needs, but the conflict area. When conflict comes into the relationship, what breaks down is the mutual corresponding activity. You guys see that? Mutually corresponding in your activity. The give and take, the back and forth, the engaging together to move forward in the relationship. The working through of issues, the determining how we're going to do this, how we're going to do that, to the planning of life and the working through of life is really the magic of two people who are willing to work together to get the job done. Let me say it again so you can get this, because that's going to be the next. That's going to be the area where we're going to have to work through. Remember the policy of joint agreement that I gave you? Y'all remember that? The policy of joint agreement is going to be the class either next week or after that where we will begin to work on how do two people agree upon something in a mutual fashion to the benefit of both parties where one person isn't taken advantage of. See what I'm getting at? Very important. So in a marriage relationship, we need attention, both of us, relationship, affection, mutual corresponding activity. That's what keeps us healthy. It also enhances the significance of both parties together. When two people are able to work in a symbiotic fashion to get the job done, where they are teammates, the value of each person grows exponentially. You know, over many, many years, we become good at what we do as a team, don't we? And then you can stand back and reflect and say, you know what? Me and my wife work good together. We get the job done. I'm thankful for our teamwork. Now, that's where we want to achieve. That's where we want to go. That's what we want to achieve. We may not be there yet, but that's what we want to be able to achieve. And therefore, this last little line, this is very important before I move on to my next point. Here's the next little line. Rejection. Do you guys see that? Abandonment or isolation. All of those are types of hell. I said, Pastor, what are you talking about? So now when a breakdown occurs in our relationship, we're in the mystery of us getting upset, starts to create dysfunctional behavior towards one another, and we don't get along anymore. Watch this. When the four horsemen are operating, you can hear them running through the house. The hoofs of the horses running through the house, trampling through the house. Contempt and criticism and stonewalling and defensiveness. Guess what? One of the fundamental tactics that we use towards one another to punish one another. Rejection. Rejection. And I've told us before that when we use the mechanism of rejection to punish one another, fundamentally, we are saying to our spouses, go to hell. I want it to resonate. Because rejection is the very thing that Jesus had to endure at the hand of the Father when the Father saw our sin on him. Stay with me now. This is what I mean about how evil we can be toward the one we love. This is how evil we can be. I want you to get this now. The moment you reject your spouse for any period of time, you are fundamentally saying, go to hell. Can I plumb down just a little bit? You want me to plumb down a little bit? My conviction about this statement is derived from the way God created us. When he created Adam, he didn't create Adam alone. God was with Adam. When Adam came into consciousness of his existence, he had God. He was never alone. It was God's prerogative and assessment that Adam needed someone to actually correspond to him on a human level. Adam didn't say, hey, God, I'm lonely. That wasn't Adam. God was saying, it is not good for man to be alone. Let me make a helper for him to correspond with him that's opposite from him, but will complement him in order to get the job done. At the same time, it will keep him from being what? Lonely. So Adam and Eve were never lonely because when God made them, he made them in relationship. Am I making some sense? But as soon as you and I go to our spouse, get away from me, what we are saying is go to hell. Go to hell. All right, let's move on to our next PowerPoint. Let me see. I think that's what I am. Okay, so now when we talk about provisional needs, we are talking about the body must eat, right? Anybody in here haven't eaten in the last week or two? Okay, good. So then I don't have to even argue that point. The body must eat. We have to be active, don't we? We have to work. Man was called to work. And this is in the context of marriage. Watch this. The body must eat. So we got to provide food and raiment for ourselves. We have to be active. We got to work. The healthiest people in the world are people who are active, who are doing things on purpose. They're not aimless or listless. They are doing things on purpose because God created you to work. You know that, right? Till the ground, a metaphor for do something purposeful. Your body is meant to be active. So you and I have to eat to fuel the body, and then we have to work, whether it's an intellectual work or physical work, whatever it is, we have to work. And then in the context of marriage, God has called us to enjoy the experience of conjugal blessings. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? Sex. What a magnificent commodity in the context of marriage. But guess what sex is before we move on? It's a capstone to the reality of the relationship. It's not a precursor, and it's not foreplay. It's a capstone. Sex is not first. Relationship is first. Mutual corresponding affection, accomplishment of goals, a working together in a unified fashion, affirming that cooperative work with one another that creates the affections that leads to the attraction that consummates in the intimacy, so that marriage is a consummating image. It's not a precursor. It's not what you do first. It's what you do last. That's good. That's good. That's good. See, this is the difference between animal sex and divine holiness in the institution of marriage. So when we get into our troubled areas and start talking about, you know, why is my marriage all jacked up? I'll help you to understand that your priorities are turned upside down and you guys are not dealing with each other on a proper level. So your sex cannot have the affirmation of a divine sanction on it. It cannot. All you can do is animal sex. You guys got that? That's all you can do. So let's move to the next one. See if I got anything else going on. Okay. What is the solution? Good. We're getting ready to get to work. And my timing is great. I love this. What is the solution? No, because I'm so glad we still have our group coming out. But over the years, as I've done ministry, one of the things that I have seen is that people don't have the perseverance and stick-to-itiveness to work through very important issues in their life. They'll give it a shot one or two times, and then they kind of wane. Like, for instance, to be honest with you, again, we had a great turnout tonight. 50% of you are going to go away from this series not changed at all. You're not going to do anything with what you're being taught. You're just going to pay it lip service. And it's going to have its consequences. Your marriages are going to still be mediocre, if not bad. And then for some of you, you're going to divorce in a year or two because you're not actually going to apply these things to your life. Now, if you say, no, Pastor, I ain't going to let that happen. Either you are committed to the class and the principles that you're getting ready to learn over the next several weeks, or you don't know yourself. And I know you better than you know yourself because I do this a lot. What are the solution to a breakdown in relationship and a breakdown in communication that leads to the four horsemen? These are the four steps that we're going to engage in for the rest of our seminar. Tonight, we're going to deal with point number one. acknowledging and addressing each other's what? That's exactly right. Tonight, we're going to acknowledge and address that we need each other as a spouse. We're going to acknowledge and address that the person that I said I do to is the person I also am saying, I'm saying at the same time, I need. The person I said I do to is the person with whom I am also saying at the same time, I need you. I need you. How many of you are here with your husbands? Are you guys here with your husband? All right. You turn to your husband. Say, I need you. I didn't even hear that. Say it again. Let me hear you.
I need
you. All right, husbands, turn to your wives. Turn to your wives. You guys ready, fellas? Let's show our girls up. Say it. I need you.
I need you.
I need you. This is very important. This is very important. This is very important. Because when the horsemen come in and the house is all jacked up, guess how we act? Like we don't need each other. That's what we're getting ready to deal with here now. So we're going to be acknowledging tonight and addressing each other's needs on a very practical, interactive level with the outlines that I've given us. With the outlines that I've given us, we're going to acknowledge some fundamental principles. What I love about the marriage seminar for marriage builders, they have over 50 years of marriage. Mr. Harley and his wife have over 50 years of marriage. They are Christian. They have over 50 years of marriage. He's been in the business of helping marriages for over 25 years. The book that I told you about that he first published, and there are several books that he did, His Needs, Her Needs, was published in 1987. In 1987. And guess what? Every year it's getting more and more popular to date. Do you know what that means? That means that man has put his finger on the pulse of a major problem in our nation. A major problem. And you know what that problem is? We have failed to understand that we need each other. And we have to be intentional about it. So I'm going to say a few things about that. Let me acknowledge all four of these. I'm going to say a few things about he needs each other. And I think I'm at the point where I want us to fill out the His Needs, Her Needs sheet, and then what I'm going to have us also do together, we're going to do together the questionnaire, okay? First of all, the first thing we're going to do tonight is work on acknowledging and addressing each other's needs to acknowledge it. Like we did audibly just now, we acknowledge we need each other. We're going to learn over the next week or two to avoid destructive behavior. To avoid destructive behavior. That's going to be the hard part. That's like a dope fiend that's going to be, you know, put in lockdown and go through withdrawals. That's the part that's going to be hard, overcoming bad behavior. But if you hang in there, you'll clean up. That's going to be the hard part, because bad behavior is so endemic in us when we're selfish. It's so endemic in us when we're selfish. But if you have been brought here by the Holy Ghost to get your life right so that you can glorify God in your bodies and in your minds with your spouses. And for you young people, this is an outstanding class. You guys are going to be so hooked up when you meet that girl, you meet that guy. You're going to have everything necessary to hog time and bring them in. Hog time, boom, boom, and bring them right on in. This is the one. I know what I need. And she knows what I need, vice versa. And now we can do this thing in the light instead of in the darkness. Because most people are doing relationships in the dark, and all we're doing is animal relationships. So we're going to acknowledge each other's needs. We're going to learn to avoid destructive behaviors. We're going to become masters at meeting each other's needs. I love this. I love this. Think about this objective. For a moment, that you're going to get a PhD in meeting your spouse's needs. You're going to rise to the highest level of achievement that you possibly can with God's help to meet your spouse's need. If that happens for both of you, your marriage will be phenomenal. Everybody will covet your marriage. Because they will see that you have found the keys necessary to make each other happy. And that you are intentional about it. They will covet what you have. Isn't that the kind of marriage you want? Remember, we just looked at Proverbs 24, right? So we got Proverbs with the nappy head, ain't had a haircut in 50 years. And then I'm talking about being able to get it all cut and groomed and lined up and everything all hooked up. Well, we looking good. Am I making some sense? All right, number four. Perfecting the art of mutually satisfying agreement. That may have gotten away from you because it sounds sort of almost kind of like a new age term. But here is what this means. Points 1, 2, and 3 cannot be achieved where you and I don't learn how to agree. See the policy of joint agreement that I gave you? We're going to be working through that. Because here's the problem. We can both say we want the best in our marriage. But when the obstacles come, we default into selfish behaviors. And when an obstacle occurs that becomes a conflict for us, we don't have the art or skill to overcome those obstacles in a way, watch this now, in a way where both of us are satisfied. What I'm hinting at before we take the break now and do the questionnaire and take a break and do the film, here's what I'm hinting at. Watch this now. What I'm hinting at is this. In you and me as persons is what is called a taker and a giver. That's a fundamental principle. I can unfold the scriptures for us and we'll do it later on. But see, this is where I was talking about earlier, that if you and I are predominantly given to selfishness, every time something comes up that's a problem or a conflict in our relationship, the person that you're going to primarily be interested in is yourself. But when it comes to resolving conflicts and differences in your relationship, if you are still holding to the ultimate axiom, you are the most important person in my life. And I am committed to giving to you extraordinary what? Those two axioms are going to dictate your happiness in the solutions that come about in those conflicts that enter into your life. Are you guys hearing what I'm saying? Because you're never going to resolve a conflict where it doesn't put your spouse first. Wow. It's amazing. See, that's going to be the exercise that we get into if we hold on and work through the classes. If we hold on and work through the classes. And when you become good at putting your wife first, putting your husband first, guess what you will be? Just Christians. That's all. You can laugh. You go ahead and laugh. Because it's just Christianity. All it is Christianity. Which means our Christianity is jacked up right now. This notion I'm a Christian and I'm living selfishly to such a degree that I am defrauding my spouse, the one I said is the most important person in my life. I'm not a Christian. Because you see, Christians prefer one another. Christians love one another. Christians avoid taking advantage of others. Christians walk in the spirit, not in the flesh. See what I'm getting at? See what I'm getting at, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, let me see what's going on here. Is there a next PowerPoint? Maybe I'm there. Let me see. Okay. All right, good. This will be the last one. Here's what I'm going to ask you to agree with in your heart. You don't have to agree with it verbally. I already have. I am so thankful for the course that I'm doing with you because I agree with it wholeheartedly. Do you agree that you married that person to assist in meeting their needs? Do you agree with that? Okay, very poor yes. I'm glad y'all not my church members. Do you agree that you married that person to assist in meeting their needs? Do you agree that their needs actually become your needs because of covenant? Do you agree with that? Do you agree that you can do a better job at that than you have?
Yes.
Are you ready to acknowledge his needs and her needs?
Yes.
See? This is the stuff that we should have got before getting married, right?
Yeah.
It's very important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't this very important?
Yeah,
I love this. I love what I'm doing here. This is epic. This is profound. This is epic. This is critical to where we are. So here's what I want to do right now. I want you to take your outline, your new outline tonight, which has to do with meeting needs. I need you guys to take that. Every couple, meeting needs. Expression, the expression sheet. Some of you guys came in new, didn't get this. I'll say, come up here, G. I need you to run through and give some of these couples both of these. I want you to take those sheets. Come on, bro. You can help out too. You guys raise your hand, and my brothers will bring this around. Now, some of you may not be married. I want you to fill it out anyway. And I want you to go through the questionnaire with me, because it will let me know that you know something about yourself. Because you can't fill this out if you don't know something about yourself. What's this? Okay, thank you. So, while he's passing that out, what I need for you to do is fill out his needs, her needs, for your spouse. It will say GBC, his needs, her needs, express. Like, see this piece of paper right here? I already have mine filled out. Trent, come get mine, will you? This is my needs that I'm going to give to my spouse. Thank you, sweetie. And I want you to fill out yours, Barb, and give it back to me. Take your time. Fill it out. It's only five. It's six. And you don't have to fill out all of them. If you just want to fill out one, fill out one. Now, for those of you who don't have spouses, watch this. Fill it out as if you had one. Because what that will do is it will affirm that you know yourself. It will affirm that you know yourself. We got some pins on the back table, all the way in the back. So I'm going to articulate this while the mic is on. You guys can do that. These are my needs, which I desire of you. These things will fill my love bank and give me joy. And because you are the most important person in my life, only you can meet these needs. No other person or thing has the right to do so. Proverbs 4:15-19. Read it in your own time. This is a great mystery. Now, this process is to specifically outline your present personal needs so that your spouse is now, watch this, obligated by knowledge of it to prioritize their efforts in these areas for the one who is the most important person in their life. Secondly, the list assures each person that they are clear on what they want and need. This is often the problem in relationships. In relationships, is that hot flashes? Are y'all, you really hot? Okay, okay. All right. So, over here, got some over here behind you, G. Don't be talking to nobody, Deacon. Just pass it out. No talking. Now, what we're about to fill out is going to cover three principles. One is specifically outlining your present needs so that your spouse is now obligated by knowledge of it to prioritize their efforts in these areas for the one who is the most important person in their life. If they actually love you, they're going to work on this. If they actually love you. If they don't love you, they're not going to work on it. Now watch this. I mean, technically speaking, we could draw up lists like this every month and give it to our spouse. And our spouse is obligated, if they hold the two axioms we talked about, to work on that list. And what I know in counsel is this. A lot of times, spouses don't express what they really want to their spouse. And so their spouse is kind of left in a fog as to how to please their spouse. Other thing is this, when you and I are going to be practicing an explicit expression of needs to our spouse, we now are going to be actually dealing with ourselves much more earnestly. I do not expect any one of you to fill out this list in sort of a haphazard, arbitrary way simply to make your spouse mad or simply to show off or to be provocative. Thirdly, I know that you are in a situation where there are at least one, two, or three things that right now you need your spouse to do. I know that. Listen, you don't have to go to the moon to figure out what it is. Watch this. You can say, honey, I've been wanting to tell you for the longest. I really need you to clean up that bathroom. See, right now, that becomes a practical need that you want them to demonstrate their care for you. Next week, you'll have another one. Because you see what we're getting ready to do? We're getting ready to activate the principle of meeting each other's needs. So that over time, the practice will become easy. Watch this. What do you need for me to do? Am I making some sense? And then she'll go, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Or she'll tell me what to do. And vice versa. And it will be our lifestyle. It won't be like hard to do. What do you need me to do? I'm not doing anything. Has anything come up lately that I have neglected to do, that you need me to do, that's going to actually strengthen our relationship and make life easier for you? You may, ladies, have a very long list of practical things that your husband is just, remember the sluggard in the proverb? Just lazy. Lazy. And you want it done. Give him the list. Because, see, you're part of the class. I heard you audibleize it. You are the most important person in my life. Okay? Vice versa. And I want you to just hand it to each other and settle it down. Now, have we all done that? Who still needs time to fill it out? You still need time to fill it out? Okay. I'll give you a few more minutes. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a 5-minute break and let you folks go to the bathroom. When we come back, we're going to work through the other questionnaire together. I have it on PowerPoint. We're going to work through it together. Okay? So don't y'all, when y'all go to the bathroom, don't go jump in the car and leave. Don't leave your spouse here. Don't leave your spouse here. All right, so if you filled it out, go ahead and go to the bathroom. We'll start back in 10 minutes. If you want to reflect upon past relationships, you can see that, right? The how happy are you sheet that I'm talking about? You can fill that out if you want to as a single person. Let me see if I can help you understand what I mean by that. If you've had past relationship issues where your relationship ended up breaking up, and you left that relationship saying, I don't know what happened. Because what the class is designed to do, if you really are serious about a good relationship, is to make sure you don't intentionally or inadvertently start walking in darkness. That's what this is about. The reason why our marriages become problematic is because they descend into a pattern of darkness where we fail to follow the rules of loving each other and therefore making sure what we do is in the best interest of the other person, i.e. biblical love, right? And then we start doing things that we don't want that other person to know. Like next week, we're going to get into behaviors that destroy the marriage. If you guys have followed the films, how many of you followed the Marriage Builders film? Excellent. Boy, I got a much better turnout this time. Awesome. I love obedient saints. I really do, because we're you know what we are? We're a bunch of individuals who operate kind of out of this raw autonomy where we don't submit ourselves to anyone. And as soon as you get imperatives or instructions from a superior, what you do is reject it and do your own thing and think you're going to be blessed. As if the superior doesn't have your best interest in view. So I'm so glad that you guys are doing it. What this mechanism and this process will do, it will give you the confidence to be honest with each other. It will also give you the integrity of making sure that you don't build patterns in your life where you're hiding from each other. Remember what happened to Adam and Eve when they ate of the tree? They hid, they lied, they blamed, and they killed. They hid, they lied, they blamed, and they killed. Watch this. When they got disconnected from God because they transgressed, they hid from God. That means when you guys are sinning, y'all don't worship God. You don't come to the light because your deeds are in darkness. Am I making some sense? You might do religion. I'm talking about coming to Christ. And when you're in the dark, in order to sustain your false cover, you have to lie. And you lie to each other and you lie to God. And in order to sustain your lie, you have to blame his fault, her fault, their fault, the preacher's fault, church's fault, my boss's fault. Everybody blamed but you. That's because you're walking in darkness. And then ultimately that blaming will lead to killing. In the Bible, killing has to do with the destruction of anything that's alive. Not just physical, spiritual, emotional, practical, social. Am I making some sense? That's a pathology. If we do marriage right, we will always walk in the light because we will operate out of those principles that says love and do what you will. And when we get into trouble, hey, we're going to both work this out because we're never going to agree to do anything that's going to defraud the other person because we have determined to love each other. Am I making some sense? All right. This is very important. This part is for grown up people. This is for grown up people. For people who are ready to honor God. And the other thing about this process that I am dealing with is going to help some of you discover whether or not you really are committed to that person. It's going to help some of you discover that. Because if you don't want to follow through the process, what you'll be saying is, I don't want to do this. Am I making some sense? I just don't want to do it. I don't love you that much that I want to actually work on the relationship with these critical coping skills. And then your marriage will be dismal for another couple of years, and then it'll be dead. But here you can work on it. So, how happy are you to, really? This is an excerpt from another psychologist who actually drew this up. There are a bunch of questions. There's a gazillion questionnaires out there to help give an assessment as to where you are in your relationship. What we're going to do now is together go through this. And what I'll have you to do is check one of the three as we go through it together. And then we'll be able to give a general assessment according to the rules of this questionnaire as to where our marriage is. You guys ready? You guys comfortable? You ready? So the quiz will give you some idea where your relationship stands when it comes to achieving happiness. Check the answer that seems closest to how you really feel right now. Watch this. How you feel right now is going to be important. Check it off, because next week, if we were to do the same questionnaire, you might feel a little different. We will be filling out a few more questionnaires before the class series is over with. Especially for those of you who are married and struggling, I want to see if these courses will do something for you on a measurable, tangible level before we're done. Am I making some sense? Actually, what I want to do right now is make sure that all of you who are part of the class, either leave contact information with me from you guys, especially if you're not members. You can put it in our prayer box back there or email us with your contact information. I want to know what you think about this seminar. I need to know that. Okay, I need it. I want to be able to post that. I want to know if it benefited you, if it didn't benefit you. Some of your faces are brand new. I will never see you again after you leave. If this series benefits you, we want to know about that. Okay, I need to know. All right. So now the quiz will give you some idea where your relationship stands when it comes to achieving happiness. Check the answer that seems closest to how you really feel, not what you desire it to be. Now watch this now. Watch this. Some of us are so hungry for our relationships to be right that we're going to check off stuff that ain't true. Don't do that. I need you to tell the truth about how you feel. Now, this is going to be a little challenge. You have to trust God, because what your mate feels out is not going to be what you feel out. Now, if your mate is not here and you think they will cooperate with you in this process, get a copy and take it home so they can fill it out. Because when they are able to assess where they are, they can be honest with you. That's good, isn't it? All right. So, remember, we want to improve, and to do this, we must be honest with ourselves. Y'all ready to be honest with yourself?
Yeah.
All right, let's pull up this questionnaire. All right, first one is, when we are apart, I think fondly of my partner. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Check it off. Second one, arguments with my partner tends to escalate with no satisfying solution. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Check it off. Thirdly, I admire my partner. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Fourthly, at least one of us has a problem with addiction. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. If my partner does or says something I don't like, I don't view them as having serious flaws. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Check it off. Sixthly, my partner frequently says or does mean and hurtful things. Emphasis, frequently says or does mean and hurtful things. Check it off. Seven, we have at least 20 minutes a day of quality couples time. This is important. Check it off. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Eight, most of the time, things have to go my partner's way. Check it off. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Nine. Each of us can admit when we are wrong. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Ten. I am dissatisfied with our sexual relationship. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. 11. We show affection regularly. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Twelve. I fantasize about leaving my partner for someone else. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Check it off. We are on the same page spiritually. Mostly true, sometimes true, mostly false. Is that it to our questions? Is that it? Good, I could have went on. All right, so now there's an order to it. For odd numbers statements, that is the questions or statements that are given 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13, score 5 points for mostly true, 3 points for sometimes true, and 1 point for mostly false. So go back to 1 and ask yourself, is it a 5, 3, or 1 for 1? You can put a 5 by it. For number 3, do the same thing. Score 5 points for mostly true, 3 points for sometimes true, and 1 point for mostly false. That's for 3. And then for 5, if my partner does something I don't like, I don't view them as having serious flaws. 5, 3, or 1. 7, 5, 3, or 1. 9, 5, 3, or 1. 11, 5, 3, or 1. 13, 5, 3, or 1. Did you guys get that? We get that? Do we all get that? We're still working on it? We in government school? We went to government school? Okay, okay. All right. Okay. All right. So let me say now, for even numbers, that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, score 1 point for mostly true, 3 points for sometimes true, and 5 points for mostly false. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and 12. Hands up if you're not finished. Okay, I'll let you work on it. I know this is Judgment Day. But we're going to be all right. We've got a mediator. And what we're going to do for the rest of the evening is just some Q&A. And so we can get out of here at 7:30. Next week we'll watch some films and I will build the third part of our class for us. How many of you are still writing? Okay. All right, good. We're close to done. Excellent. Excellent. Now, for those of you who are who are done, that was not a Freudian slip. It was not a Freudian slip. Huh? I didn't hear you. Oh, we'll do that in the Q&A. I'm going to open the mic up in a little bit. Number 5 says, if my partner does or says something I don't like, I don't view them as having serious flaws. We'll make that a question. Very important. It's insightful. That question is insightful because it has to do with whether you are critical or objective. Are we done yet? No. Somebody said no. Okay. Who's not done? Okay. All right. So we're just about done. We're getting ready to have some fun now. And I'll need a couple of Phil Donahue's. Not quite yet. So we can do some ministry and we'll be able to shut it down. All right. So now here's what it says. If you have a score of 50 to 60 points, your relationship is likely to be happy with mild improvements in a few areas needed. If you have 50 to 60. If you score 40 to 59 points, your relationship probably is happy or somewhat happy, but there are definite areas where improvement is necessary or the happiness will be lost. I actually put that last addendum there for reasons I will explain down the line. If you score 28 to 39 points, your relationship is probably comfortable at best with modest happiness periods from time to time. You need to follow through with the enhancement principles. Those are the things we're going to deal with over the next several weeks. If you guys are at Grace, you guys know that I'm working through the classes in terms of basic fundamentals. That's where we are. We're going to deal with building principles, and that's kind of where we are now. The fourth category, our third category, is the category of the master key of contentment, talking about how to assess how blessed your marriage is and not trying to achieve something beyond what God has given you unless it's for Him to do it, and knowing what it means to be content with such things you have. In some marriages, the struggle is that couples are not content. And because they're not content, they really stress their marriages out by reaching for ideals that are not realistic. And that's a personal problem that they have that they then transfer to everybody in the house. If you are discontented with yourself, you make everybody else in the house miserable because you don't affirm the good things that are going on in the house. You can destroy a home that way. So we're going to talk about the master key of contentment in our fourth class, how to see the beauty of what God has given you and working from there to enjoy life. If you score 28 to 39, your relationship is probably comfortable at best with modest happiness periods from time to time. You need to now follow through with the enhancement principles, how to build that. If you score 20 to 27 points, your relationship is not very satisfying. You may have moments of contentment, but mostly you are not happy and probably depressed. Make improvements now before it's too late. The horsemen are riding. That's true, isn't it? Yeah. Listen, now watch it. If you score 19 or below, you are very unhappy in your relationship, and improvement is unlikely without professional help. Get help now. The horsemen are ruling. Is that true? So you don't have to tell me how you scored. But are you guys all fairly clear through this test, a very objective test? You got a sense of how you feel about your marriages? You guys got a sense of how you feel about your marriages in front of you? You who are couples, does your spouse know how you feel? You need to swap it with each other. Now, okay, we're getting ready to do a little work. We're going to shut it down in 15, 20 minutes. We're getting ready to do a little work now. I need you to stay with me on this part because this is about opening up and talking things through. If you are here as a couple and you've taken this assessment test, how many of you who have taken this assessment test discovered that you think alike? That your scores are equal, fairly equal. Is it fairly equal? Yours, 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 fairly equal. Y'all fairly equal? Good. That's good. Equal. Now the ones who are equal, now watch this. I want you to hear me now. Just the ones who raised their hand and said their scores are equal don't mean their scores are good. They could both have got 19. So I just want you to know that. I just want you to know that right now. They both could have 19. So stay with me for a second. Hey, they didn't raise their hand because they got 50 together. I want to show you a truth that's critical to where we are. Those two people are honest with each other. Those two people are honest with each other. And it indicates that they have the same feelings about either the poor nature of their relationship or the health of it. If one of you guys got between 10 and 19, and the other one got 45 to 60, y'all in trouble. We are not operating on the same premise. And in relationships, that happens. That's why this test is being taken. This is in order to objectify our class, because if I don't help us objectify our class, you really won't know where you are, and you really won't necessarily know how bad you need to stay in the class. Am I making some sense? And for those of you who have taken the test, in lieu of past relationships, you get an idea now, a little more tangible and concrete idea of why the relationship was problematic. So I'm going to open the mic for questions and concerns so we can work through this. So I'll need three guys for every side, and I want you guys to open up. Let's talk. Let's talk about this. Questions, observations. All right, Mike, hand to Alina. On this side, okay, so you can go down there to my sister down there. Put the mic to your mouth and let me see if talking it.
Testing,
1, 2.
Yeah, is it on? Is it on? Just push it on. Is it on? Okay, we getting that one over there?
Testing.
There we go. All right, let me see that one, Mike. Put it to your mouth.
Testing, 1, 2.
Okay, good. Go to your prospective questionnaires. Do we got any questions over in this section? Over in the right-hand section. No questions over here? We scared? Let's get some questions going. We got to work stuff through here. We got 50 people over here. Okay, give it to my brother Van. Do we have questions back there? Go all the way to the back, my brother. Okay. So, let me just talk through this first one. I want to talk through this first one just for the class, and then we'll respond to our questions. Here's the first one. When we are apart, I think fondly about my partner. That is so important because you are apart a lot. And what that says is, whether you think fondly or not, talks about or addresses how you interact when you're together. If when we're together, we are not depositing in our relationship healthy, positive experiences. When we're separated, it's very difficult to think fondly of that other person. Isn't that true? So this is a very germane question, because two people in covenant are supposed to be thinking about each other all the time. They're supposed to be thinking about each other all the time. Okay, so your question, Alina? Put it to your mouth like this. Yeah, there you go.
So my question isn't about what you
observation. No, just whatever.
So if you have a child entering into the marriage, how then is your husband supposed to be the most important person to you if it's just been you and your child for some time?
But good question. I would say that a woman should not marry a man if she is not willing to recognize him as being the one that will become the most important person in her life. Children are often obstacles between couples. If your child becomes number one, he is your husband. See, we don't understand biblical marriage. The husband and wife are welded together. Children are the byproduct. That little prince or princess gets the benefits of both parents, but he does not get the wedge in between mama and daddy and have full authority or influence over mama. You are not ready to marry that man if you aren't willing to make that man the most important person in your life. And follow this. The idea of making someone the most important person in your life does not exclude other people from being important. But you cannot benefit your children if your children think they are more important to you than your spouse is. That is the precursor to the destruction of many homes. I would assert to you that many a husband and wife have had the horrendous experience of raising up children, both being biologically the parents, and discovering that the children wedged them. And that because of a fallacy in the relationship between the husband and the wife, they have allowed the children to be a legitimate wedge between those two. And divorces often occur when the child becomes the idol, or the children becomes the idol of the mama or the daddy. And there's this subtle jealousy and power struggle going on when that occurs. That's a horrible thing. It's not good for the child, and it's not good for the parents. The best thing for parents, or children rather, is to see mama and daddy so in love with each other that the thought of trying to divide and conquer, which is what those little monsters try to do, can't ever occur. And when they become adults, you know what they will remember? Ah, mama and daddy were tight. That's the way I want to be married. Question over here.
Two comments. Seems the ideal that you are talking about is impossibly high. That's one comment. Secondly is, I was talking with a couple of people about how challenging it is to be honest with yourself as well as with your spouse. You don't want to hurt their feelings, and some of the issues are embarrassing.
Right.
But also the fact that many times it's our own hang-ups that are causing the problem, and it's not because of the spouse, so you don't want to mention it because it's my problem, you know?
Right.
And so it's just a comment that it's kind of difficult to work through that and to be honest.
It's difficult, but it's doable. Difficult, but it's doable. Let me speak to Vance's statement right here. All right, so when two people come together in matrimony, they're two flawed individuals. They're not two perfect individuals. They're two flawed individuals. And when we discover that we have characteristics that makes it hard for us to share with our spouse our deepest and most problematic elements, well, what that indicated was that we did not actually do the prerequisite work necessary before getting married. So now in the marriage, we are now struggling through how to develop a one-to-one, face-to-face, position one relationship. Am I making some sense? Had we gone through a kind of lengthy and comprehensive premarital course where we could learn how to lay things on the table and prepare that person for some of your skeletons, then that person could have been able to determine whether or not they have enough love to handle that. Am I making some sense, you guys? So a lot of times we go into the marriage unprepared to deal with the real person in front of us. And if we don't have good coping skills, good negotiating skills, which is our next class, how to develop negotiating skills that allow us to work through our mess without it backfiring on us. Remember, if I have a spouse with whom I am concerned that if I share with her my struggles, my innermost struggles, she's going to reject me, then that means we have not developed a fail-proof system to walk in the light. And so our marriage is going to struggle until we build a system where we can be doggedly honest. Now, again, the objective of our class is for us to have the kind of relationship where we can grow into each other at the highest levels of honesty and clarity and commitment, where I can tell my spouse anything and know that they're not going to throw me under the bus. It's a process, though. And so we have to build those mechanisms into our relationship. This is what I meant by not hiding, not lying, not blaming, not being defensive, not having all these closets. But you don't have to dump everything on your spouse. You do have to work it through. Other question? Right here. My sister. Can you stand up?
Yes.
Oh, no, you don't have to stand up. You don't want to, but I can't see you.
The question we've been talking about is, we've been married for 28 years, and sometimes we know that our primary focus should be each other, but the struggle is that sometimes you can idolize your mate, And one of the reasons I ask that question is, like, for example, if there are things that are going on that you're struggling with, it's easy to contact your mate and talk that through than to even go to God. And so one of the questions I had is, how do you balance that and manage that so that you keep them where they should be and honor God, obviously, as your first husband or wife?
That's awesome. So I want you to, before you jump on it, all you Dr. Fields and Oprahs and all, before you jump on it, I love it. That's why I want to do this Q&A. I love Q&As. That's why I do a Monday show, because I love dealing with these kind of issues. First of all, she has an outstanding relationship with her husband. Outstanding! To be able to call him and talk about anything is absolutely fabulous. That means he has a good ear, unless he's smooth. And I know him. I know my brother. But they have developed a good relationship over the years where she can dump. And that you have an inclination, an impulse to talk to him first is really not a problem. It's really not a problem. If God needs to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, sweetheart, you know, I gave him to you. He's cool. But he gets his answers from me. So every now and then you can chat with me too, okay? But God's not jealous, because the husband is supposed to be the vicar of God in the home. You guys got that? Yeah, we can clap on that one. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. So we can grow in that. We can grow it. Don't you start. Don't you start. I need some more questions. Any questions? Questions back here. Let's run, fellas. Y'all young. Question over there. Question over there. Let's go, fellas. They're going to want. Raise your hand if you got a question right there. Hand up so we can get these questions. We need to work through this. You can. Ophelia's right there in front of you. Ray, take the microphone, Ophelia. Give right there. There you go. Any questions over here? Come right here. Give him the mic so we can expedite this. What's your question, my brother?
First, just want to say thank you for this class. Amen. It's been phenomenal. Amen. I want to piggyback off the sister who spoke right here about, you know, when you bring in your kids. What about when you have a blended family?
Right. Right. You know. The blended family where we are today is a very common challenge, right? Blended family. So you're not working from the same premise with a blended family as you are a biological family, because obviously with a biological family, you have history. History plays a major role in the bonding factor. We're going to talk about bonding, connecting, attachment, all that down the line. So obviously the biological parent is going to have a stronger relationship to those children than you will to those children, vice versa. And you will have to over time build that kind of relationship. It still remains, however, that the biological parent ought to be trending towards demonstrating a level of love priority to that person that they have married, that the children sense that that person is the most important person in my mama's life, in my daddy's life, and that's important to me too. See, it does not mean you can't love the kids because you love them supremely. It just means that the kids are going to be prioritized under your relationship. Now, as we go into the class further, here's what we're going to discover. That the only reason you two, husband and wife, maintaining the highest love priority towards one another is a threat is either because both of you are selfish or one of you is selfish. See, this is where character comes in. So now, like, we're going to be talking about the policy of joint agreement. And what that means is how we work through issues so that everybody is happy, right? Well, there's constant policy of joint agreement between parents and children. How do we agree to raise our children, right? How do we agree to bring our children to understand what our goals and objectives are? Well, parents can be selfish and be takers, and the children can lose out. The children can be selfish and be takers, and the parents can lose out. In other words, if we are jacked up people in the area of not knowing how to love, our problem is love. Our problem is love. If the children love that stepfather or stepmother, it's not going to be a problem. If they don't love that step parent, then they've got to work through that. And the biological parent has to work harder to help the children see the loving virtue of their spouse by her or his relationship with them, so that the children do not feel threatened by that new party in the relationship. Am I making some sense there?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any problem, it's around love not reigning as the basic foundation for the whole household. That's the battle we're going to be fighting. How to actually work together in a context of love so that the thief, the enemy, the wicked one doesn't get in to destroy by greed and selfishness and narcissism, because that's what destroys marriages. Even with biological parents, you'll have a son or a daughter who has been neglected or overlooked, and they'll grow up with problems and they'll start acting out, and either mama or daddy will have a guilt complex and start attaching themselves to the child, and the child now has wedged a gap between mama and daddy. And the battle is on. This is why in the context of marriage, you need God. What's the next one? What's our next question?
My question is a twofold question. The Bible talks about wives submitting to their husbands. What if that trust is abused? Mm-hmm. What does a wife do? And then secondly, on the aspect of being on the spiritual level, what if one partner is not at that spiritual level where he can guide his family and lead his family in biblical truths? What does a wife do in that case, or a spouse?
Yeah, two things with that. The trust factor is an ongoing project in every relationship. Obviously, case scenarios will occur where major trusts have been breached. Okay? That's a problem. That's why I took two classes to talk about what marriage is as an ideal. But yes, sometimes selfishness rises to the level of a breach in the marriage. Remember the first film we saw, Infidelity? How that he said, make sure that you do everything to avoid infidelity because the wounds go so deep. And so what happens with marriages, if we don't define marriages the way we have done today, marriage is the relationship of extraordinary care. See, I'm not saying these terms just to make myself feel good. These terms mean something. So a lot of our experience as couples is based upon relationships that are not built upon these axioms. Our marriages, in many cases, have been simply ordinary marriages with windows open for the thief to come in the side door, the windows, the back door, even the front door. He didn't just walk in the front door, because we have not built that necessary framework for the marriage to be saved. Remember, we talked about things like when we're in position number one, we can be honest, we can communicate, we can work through, we see each other. Position number one keeps us from falling prey to cheating on each other on multiple levels. Position number one. Am I making some sense? Position a face to face. When we cheat on each other, it's because we have abandoned position number one. And we may be operating in position number two, where we're working together to pay the bills. That's what we call the pragmatic position. But because we're not looking at each other and making each other the ultimate priority, in position number two, we have room to cheat. But ultimately, it's going to show up that we're cheating because we are not putting in the energy to sustain the security that comes from a position number one lifestyle. Y'all understand what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. And number one is the hardest relationship for both men and women because we all have selfish tendencies. But you have to work at it. You have to hold the rule. This is the most important person in my life. And every time I don't treat them like that, I am endangering the security of the relationship. If this relationship is not a relationship of extraordinary care, I am descending to and devolving to an ordinary marriage. And now every other lover has an option at my spouse. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Time, work, curriculums, play, any other life experience now can come in and dominate the relationship because we have not nurtured a relationship of extraordinary care. where ultimately you love being with your spouse. Next question. Over here, okay.
Can a spouse, one spouse, come from a very dysfunctional family and marriage sabotage the current marriage by setting a stage of something dysfunctional to make the environment comfortable with what they used to?
Of course. And what that would be fundamentally is that you guys did not have rules of engagement. See, the class that we're having presupposes the necessity of rules of engagement. And what I've said to you before is this, that many of us have gotten married without any rules whatsoever. You got married out of a pure biological attraction, which is that emotion that was romantic. And you bypassed all the signals that said, hey, we got problems here. And you just jumped in hoping everything would work out. This dude or this woman had issues from the get-go. And God showed them to you, but you ignored them. And thought that you were the best thing for that man. You was going to just change him by looking at him in his eyes. Googly eyes was going to just change his patterns. And guess what? Sex does not make a man better. You can't make a man new by sex. He ain't going to get born again by how good you sex him. He ain't going to be renewed in his mind, transformed in his life, new pep in his step, doing the right thing by you sexing him. I'm just telling you the truth. So you still have the hard work to do of getting to a place of walking in the light. Hey, I love you, but I discover now we got a mountain of issues. Let's go get some help. That's why I said if he were here or they were here and y'all were taking the test and y'all down to 19-20 on the test scale, remember what he said? Go get help. How? Now. Because that's the only answer. Or your marriage is simply, our marriage will be simply a prison filled with frustrations. And there may be other things going on. I have discovered where there is ongoing and unending dysfunctionality. I have discovered that there are forms of addiction taking place in the life that that person is engaging in that is unhealthy as well. Alcoholism, drugs, porn, this, that, or the other. Are you hearing what I'm saying? That there was an overall unhealthiness in the parties, one or both, that sustains the dysfunctionality. Couple more questions. Couple more questions. Here we go. One over here. Oh, Jamie, you got the microphone? Okay. Give the sister a dent because Jamie was earlier. Go on, my sister. I need to hear.
Pastor Jesse, I just wanted to know, last week you talked about how sometimes even before a person enters into a relationship, they see like character flaws or they see the different modes of that the people are in. Like, say, for instance, if a person is in a fight mode or
yes.
a flight mode.
Yes.
So what do you do?
You like, don't get married.
Right. But if you see, like, how do you, I understand that, but how
you
do
go
you
get counsel.
But and then it, like if the person is doesn't want the counsel,
you don't marry him.
But how do you like? Do you just bluntly say
it's
I don't want to?
Walking away.
Thank you.
Now watch this. I want to say one more thing to my beloved sister. Because she's one of the family. I've been knowing her for years. I'm only rough on my family. You visitors, I wouldn't be that rough on you. When you meet somebody that you know, as I said proverbially a couple of weeks ago, is like what the cat drug. You know when the cat drags something in the house, right? It ain't never something you want to keep in the house. When we use the metaphor, the cat dragged that in. It's something you never wanted. It was outside for a reason. Right? So stay with me for a second. I'm just share with you what I'm getting at. And too many times my sisters will put up with that which only the cat would drag into the house. And that really is where my sister needs to get counsel for her own low self-esteem or lack of self-worth or desperations and things of that nature. By the way, If you really want to prepare for a really, really good marriage, work on yourself first before getting married. Cheney.
Okay, they're already married. They got married. They tied the knot. What advice would you give for newlyweds for creating the right atmosphere conducive for getting off to a good start?
They need to be mentored by really, 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 really good couples. And then they need to get the rules of engagement. One, rules of engagement. Two, because where do you go to get material? Like, most people are miffed as to even to do it. So what people do is they get in that plane thinking they can fly. Remember what we learned? Take off. We're flying that thing. Don't even know the instrument panel signals or anything. And then it gets rough and they think that's just the way marriage is supposed to go. Right? So really what you pastors should be doing is telling young couples, get counsel, get help, get material. Go online, look up material to help your marriages. Your marriage will not get better by osmosis. It won't happen. It will happen where we target nurturing, target cultivating, target developing our character and having sound biblical principles on how to love one another until it becomes a lifestyle. That's the only way it'll happen. We cultivate it and practice it until it becomes a lifestyle, or else we're going to just have mediocre marriages, if not bad marriages. A couple more questions. Where are we at? Hold on. Right here, back here.
I have a question. You mentioned a few times, I feel like, about how biochemical connection should...
I can't hear you, sweetie.
Oh, you've mentioned a few times how biochemical connection should not be the foundation.
That's right.
Of a relationship. My question is, when you're just brothers and sisters in Christ, you haven't entered a relationship or anything yet, what is the risk of everything else being in line wonderfully, but maybe just... no evidence of too much of a biochemical connection? Like, is that
right.
Good? So, is that scary? Or I don't know.
So, the emotional love, which was also called romantic love, the emotional love, or romantic love, is designed, ladies and gentlemen, for the purpose of, it's called attraction. Like, say, for instance, you don't have an emotional or romantic feelings toward that individual. That's called eros love. You don't have an attraction to him that's leading towards what we call attachment. You don't want to attach to that dude. You guys got that? You don't want to attach to him. You need to feel like you're in love with that person on a deep romantic emotional level. You don't want to marry your best friend. You just don't. You just want to be best friends with that best friend. You want the one that you are deeply romantically in love with to be your best friend. But you don't want to marry your best friend waiting for the feeling of deep romantic love. Because that's not the nature of marriage. Marriage is not meant to be absent of deep romantic, emotional, sexually driven love. Are you hearing me, sweetheart?
So if you're trying to live purely, though.
Okay, but see, so you understand that we're going to be operating on a Christian ethic from the beginning. So let me say this. If you're sleeping with him, you're in sin. If all you guys that are sleeping with each other outside of marriage, you're in sin. You need to stop right now and get it right. You need to just stop right now, because fornication, which is what the Bible calls it, is consummating what should only take place in the attachment process. In the attachment process, it's where you and I are able to bond together. And sex is designed to bond. The emotional feelings that start with romantic, erotic love, which are attractions, and then all of a sudden we got the hormones going, right? They're designed to lead to the attachment. Because once we are having sex, we are bonding. We are bonding. And that bonding without covenant is destructive to the relationship. Because here's what's going on. You are reaching the highest level of physicality and the dynamics that come with it on the biological level. All kinds of wonderful chemicals are kicking in that make you feel good, that make you ready to rest in his arms, her arms. We call that bonding. But we really are not in a context for bonding because we're not married. So what that does is it creates a conflict in the mind. Because here we are laying up after we didn't have all these orgasms, and we know we're not married. And we're in conflict now because we have actually jumped the gun and gone from attraction to bonding without covenant. That is not God's design. So now we're struggling because of guilt, right? And we're still asking the question, should I marry this dude? Well, we didn't gave away the milk. And ambivalence is setting in because the price of the milk was too low. Ambivalence is setting in. Because as long as I can get the milk for this cheaper price, why should I exhaust my bank account? What I'm trying to help you guys understand is this is counterproductive to true bonding. It's counterproductive. So if you have, if you get along with this individual as a friend, but you don't have that drive on a romantic level, well, stay right there. Don't think in terms of marriage. Most of the time is one person that wants to bond, that is, take it from the level of attraction to attachment, and the other person doesn't. The person that doesn't need to cut it off and say, hey, I ain't going nowhere with you. Because I'm not feeling it. Here's the problem. If you marry your friend and you cool with not having sex for weeks and months and years, and then all of a sudden that oven fires up, woof, but it's not for him, you in trouble. You in trouble. And he already cold. Because we in covenant context, but he fighting to get you to love him emotionally. Remember what we learned? To marry that individual is to intentionally want to meet their needs. Right? Well, to want to meet their needs really requires the presence of emotional and romantic love. Otherwise, it's a labor on your part to pretend like you have this deep erotic affection towards him, but you really don't. So you leave that person alone in terms of him being a prospect for marriage. And for those of you who are sleeping around, stop. One more question, we'll shut it down. Okay.
Okay, so, Pastor,
if I'm
married and I'm the only one that's interested in the rules of engagement, is this where 1 Peter 3:1 comes in at? Because I know it tells me to be a woman that is, that I should present myself before him with my conversation to be one that would win him over, not only in the rules of engagement, but to Christ.
Well, yeah, and the rules of engagement are really for our own personal walk with God to be executed and lived out at the highest level. Mm-hmm. So the rules of engagement are for you, first and foremost, to do a better job as you. Because you could probably do a better job in your relationship with your husband. Right. Are you hearing what I'm saying?
Yes,
so the tools that we're getting ready to get into will help you find avenues to interact with him, engage with him more effectively, which might advance some prospect for him to want to engage you better. Because sometimes what's happening is when we are in relationship, we get stuck, don't we? On actually wanting to take that relationship to the next level, and we don't know how to do it. And what we need are tools. But there are case scenarios where only one spouse is a believer, the other is not. And you have to be able to rest with loving him in the state that he's in and finding the rest of your satisfaction in your walk with God without making him feel bad. Okay, let's close.
Pastor,
what's that?
There are some people over here that actually wanted you to answer her second question. She asked two questions.
What was the second one? Oh. Hold on. There it is. There's the mic.
Sorry. Yeah, my second question was about spirituality, where the both of you are not on the same spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does one of the spies, especially the wife, if the husband is not leading the family as he ought to, what does the wife do in that case?
Right. So what you do when you guys are having struggles on a spiritual level is you seek advice from good biblical counsel as to how to negotiate that lapse. Believing women have for a long time been able to work with non-believing spouses. You just make sure your children are raised up in good, faithful, gospel-preaching churches. You model for those children love and compassion for your spouse, and you pray for your spouse that he would rise to the level of needing to take over. That's the only option that you have. The spouse that may not be as vitally interested in spiritual things as you want is going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. There's a vacuum in the relationship on a spiritual level. I actually put in that last question because as I was going through these different questionnaires, I didn't see that question. I put that question in there. That statement, are we spiritually, compatible? Are we operating on a spiritual level? Because I think that that's really crucial. But you're going to hear some different things in the videos next week about that. Or if you go online, marriagebuilders.com, you'll see that they have their observations about it. Many couples have lived with spouses who haven't had the same level of spiritual passion as the other. That's to keep you humble and to keep you praying and to keep you working through your issues. Am I making some sense? All right. Remember, we're not in criticism mode. We're in confession mode because we both have issues and we want to be able to do better. So let me close in prayer. Father, thank you for this time. Thank you for our class. Thank you for all of the students. Thank you for all of the couples. Thank you for all of the young people who are wanting to prepare for a good, good marriage in the future. Give them the wisdom and the patience and the discretion to be able to take the tools and be ready to use them in discerning a mate for the future. For those of us who are married, Father, we pray that we would not neglect the things that we are learning, and that you would give us grace to apply them so that we can demonstrate heartily and practically our love for you and our love for our spouse. Help us to remember, O God, that marriage is a relationship of extraordinary care, and that my spouse is to be, apart from you, the most important person in my life, and everything else will fall into place. So as we go our way, give us traveling mercies, and prepare us to worship you tomorrow as you ought to be worshiped. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you guys.